All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Tim Peel, and you're watching Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
Well, what's up, Rigorelia? Back from another trip to Africa or Jamaica or wherever the hell you were this time?
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice and warm.
Not as tan as normal.
No?
You mean you're tan, but usually you seem a little bit
crispier.
Sun. Was it rainy?
Yeah, it was a little overcast.
Oh, was it?
A little overcast, but...
In the jungle?
Yeah, well...
Kind of?
Partly.
Partly.
Still got some sun.
To have a good time.
Didn't always look pasty white.
You're not pasty white at all. No, you're tan.
No, it was a great time, yeah. I actually had an athlete retreat, and do you remember the name, Kevin Cauley?
Yes.
Remember that smaller guy who was in the Islanders organization? He was down there. He actually played 16 games with the Islanders, and the 16th game he broke his neck. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, my God, no.
It's back in like 2008, I believe. So he's been down and out since then. He actually was working for the Dallas Stars, but just really couldn't get out of the funk, depression, just suicidal ideation, the whole bit. Anyways, he was one of the guys down there, and... he had an amazing experience.
Good
transformational.
That's awesome,
so he's doing well. But just, interesting how things come full circle. Saw the ESPN thing. He reached out.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. And then, just kind of voiced his struggles and, obviously got in the plane and showed up and did the work. So
that's awesome, man.
It's always nice to see this type of, medicine helping people and just how powerful it is. Because again, like, what is that, 15 years?
Yeah.
He's been just down and out and nothing's worked. Therapist after therapist, doctor after doctor, nothing's worked. So,
good for him.
A little
man.
Mushy,
that's
there,
awesome.
Nast, and all of a sudden he's
it's
backing
awesome,
himself.
Man. I really like seeing, I get a lot of messages from people, just like screenshots here at a bar, they're somewhere, and they're showing it.
Yeah.
And a lot of other people just reaching out saying, hey, man, I saw it's pretty powerful stuff, so that's good to hear, man, that he saw it and you got to help him out.
Yeah,
I forgot it. I do remember that name though. Sure do.
Fought him a couple of times there. Yeah, we talked about it.
Was he upset you beat him up?
No, he was grateful for it.
He was grateful. Yeah. All right.
Well, he understood the business and he was in that line of work too, so he's a scrappy young guy.
For sure.
But all good, yeah. Good experience.
Good, man.
How about you?
Just been grinding, sucking in metal dust from blades, and
didn't have that dust up in the high jungle.
No, they didn't have that in the high jungle. Did camp with the Rebels. We had main camp.
Nice.
200 kids.
Wow,
man. Yeah, 200 kids. Cut it down after a couple days to 80. then to 40, and then I think we're down to about 35, and then they'll all come to camp in a few weeks, actually. It's coming up pretty quick, yeah. So that's about it, man. Just been working, grinding. Me, Debo, and Baller been trying to carry Nasty Knuckles along while you were on vacay, you know, all the time.
You're doing a good job.
And cuddling it up, and, you know, that's about it, buddy.
Yeah, well, I hear you.
Some news while you were gone.
Yeah, I saw that. I got the news too. You know?
You did get it?
Oh, there's a little thing going later out there.
Patrice Bergeron, man. Shut down.
I didn't see that one coming, Nast.
Well, you know, we talked about when the end of the year how he waited. He was the last guy, kind of crying a little bit, emotional, hitting everybody's handshake and hugging all the players. But I had talked to a couple of our friends, equipment guys there. We're in Arizona, and they're like, we don't know because he's training his ass off. So I was like, he's going to come back one more year, you know? And then, you know, I guess he decided, you know, 1,294 games regular season.
Not a bad,
was enough.
Not a bad career.
Six Selkies, I think Baller said.
Yeah.
What a career, man. And what a human being, too. Like, just a great guy.
Absolute pro.
God, man, it was a scary situation for him. Remember when Randy Jones hit him? Like, Jones, he did obviously wasn't purposely to injure him. He just went in as one of those weird things. And, you know, he probably saw his career flash before his eyes.
That was ugly.
I think he missed, if I'm not mistaken, he missed probably the rest of that season. I'm not sure if he did or not, but that was a scary situation. But what a great player. And I'm sure he'll have something to do with the Bruins.
Oh, I would think so, right? What's Jim Montgomery thinking about this?
I don't know how happy Monty is about this, but he's such a good coach. I'm sure he'll figure something out, and I'll ask him next weekend. We have a 25th year anniversary for the Philadelphia Phantoms when we won in 98.
What a crew. That'll be fun.
What a crew, and we have almost every single player, with the exception of two guys we couldn't find, and then two that unfortunately had passed away in the last year and a half or so, Andre Payette and Garrett Burnett.
Right,
gonna miss those guys. Obviously, we do every day, but it's gonna be a great time. Everybody's coming. It's crazy. We've had a group text going for like 2 months,
and it's
awesome. Almost like we're back in '98.
It's
the same
hasn't
dumb
changed.
Shit.
Yeah, hasn't changed
it's
at
hilarious.
All.
Hilarious, Frankie just saying shit that he could go to jail for.
Yeah,
basically
right.
like he did when he was on here. And you know, it's funny. Like when I've known Jim Montgomery for so long. He's a head coach in the NHL, but I knew him as a player,
right.
You know, when he's a little shyster.
Yeah, no
and
kidding.
It's funny because on our things, like he's saying shit like he would when he's playing. It's fun to, you know, talk to everyone like that and kind of catch back up. And I can't wait for next weekend. So I'll ask him how he's feeling about.
Oh, I can't wait to hear some stories about that weekend.
Yeah, for sure.
Should be a rodeo.
Should be a rodeo. Your boy, Tom Wilson.
Oof.
Wow.
That's
signs
a
new
ticket.
Deal. 7 years, 6.5 sheets. You should have kept playing, Riggs.
Oh, man. No kidding.
They threw you on the line with Ovi. I'm guaranteeing 10. Easy.
Oh, easy.
Off your body. Maybe more. No, he's a good player.
Oh, he really is.
Like,
I mean,
he's a hell of a player,
he's
man.
He's that like power forward you want on your team.
He's definitely that guy.
You lock him up.
Whether you love him, you probably love him in Washington. You hate him if he's on the other team. He's had some questionable hits, but, dude, I'll take that guy on my team any day
totally.
Of the week.
Yeah,
he shows up when he has to, and he's actually a really good guy. You know, we got to really get to talk to him when we were down with Tovey with the sticks and everything, and he was looking at him. He was hurt at the time.
He was,
but, he's a hell of a player, man. That's good for him, man.
Yeah,
that's a great deal.
Yeah,
I mean, my God.
Honestly, I was a little surprised to see the length of it, but nonetheless, I mean, it's like, you know, because you said it's like, how old is this guy?
Yeah,
you know, a 7 year deal, but I mean, nonetheless, where are you going to find a power forward like that around the league? You know, it's like you may as well just lock him up. He's part of the organization. He's franchise. He's one of the franchise players.
Yeah,
there. I mean, first round
for
pick.
Sure.
So. It's good signing.
It's good signing for them. And you wonder how long Washington's going to hang on to this little core they have. Their power play is still effective.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, I don't know how good they are. But anyway, Sebastian Aho.
Yeah. Another big one.
Thanks for coming.
Oh.
Now, there's a guy that's putting points up an 8-year deal.
Yep.
9.75 sheets, bro.
That's a lot.
10 smell. That's a lot of cake, bro. What do you do with that? Invest in Jamaica?
Go buy up an island or two?
Maybe. But boy, they locked him up. He's there for good now, I would say. And heck of a player, though.
Yeah.
Not a very big guy, but he's a crafty player. Yeah, crafty player. And
good score.
Claude Giroux talked Vlade Tarasenko into signing Ottawa there for 1 year, $5 million. It took a while to get him on a team. I know everyone has cap issues, that's for sure, but wasn't sure I saw him going there, but I guess maybe that takes up, you know, they lost DeBrincat.
Yeah.
They need somebody to put the puck in the net, and Claude Giroux's a guy that can get him to put in the net. So
exactly.
Be interesting to see how they do in Ottawa this year, if they get better. And then Debo's guy, Troy Terry, gets a 7-year deal. Seven smell. I said, Debo, is it not a lot? He goes, he was good 2 years ago. 2 years ago. Just saying. No, but heck of a deal, man. Lots of cake.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, should have been a skill guy, Nast. Well, you are a skill guy, but I mean, I should have been a skill guy.
You did all right.
Tried to.
You did all right. Mm. Now you're lighting it up. All-Star game coming up this week. Tomorrow? Is that tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Saturday?
Whew. Saturday night.
You have all Voorhees. And Voorhees. And you have all these people asking you to play Check It for Charity because we're not going to be able to because of my my reunion. But I can't believe you're not going to play. Kasia Deli wanted you to play. Ray wanted you on the team.
Well, I just couldn't make it.
What do you have going on, man?
Well, there's not enough time in a day.
Yeah, I know. Well, we found that out today, boys.
So I haven't played in like over 2 months, All-Star game.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. So
should be a little fun.
Anyway, great guest today.
Yeah. Yeah. Good friend Timmy Peel.
Yep.
Longtime referee. Yes, NHL. Sir. I think we're ready to rock your Nass.
Let's do it, man.
Episode 124. Here we go.
Woo. Woo.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. This week, we are very fortunate and excited to have veteran NHL referee of 1,362 games, Riley, 90 playoff games. This guy did the Olympics. He did All-Star game. He did two Winter Classics, I believe. And ZZ Top wrote a song about this man. It's called Sharp Dressed Man.
Yeah.
Because this guy, he looked good when he walked into the arena in his suits, and he looked good on the ice. I swear your shit must have been tailored. Mr. Tim Peel, what's up, brother?
Hey, boys. Thanks for having me on. Listen, you read those stats, it's hard to believe they fired me, but I'm sure.
That's the truth, man. That's the truth.
But no, you know what? It's funny, Derek, when people said, where'd you get your style? And when I was a kid, I was 13 years old, and we lived in a trailer park. I was adopted and lived in a trailer park in New Brunswick, Canada. And beside the trailer park was the golf club. And I started working there, cleaning clubs and caddying and so on. And then the head pro moved me up to the pro shop, and he wasn't a very big guy, and he kept giving me all his golf clothes. And so I'd always be like a sharp-dressed kid at the golf course, and my mom really – always made sure I looked nice, even though we didn't have a lot of money, always made sure I looked nice when I went to school. And it was always kind of something that just stuck with me. So
it definitely had. I always used to say, like, we had this joke, like, I'm terrible hockey player. Like, I grew up in North Carolina, but I loved Kovalev's style. Like, everything seemed perfect on him, his gloves, his pants. So I always would say that, like, I'm like Kovalev. And I actually kind of got to know him a little bit, and he signed a jersey for me, and it said, "Too Nasty, I love your on ice style." but you always look good. Even your ref uniform looked tailored, man. Like, you're just always looking sharp.
Well, you know what, and that's a funny thing that you brought up, because all our guys now, they taper their pants, they taper their jerseys and so on. And a quick story, I was working in a game in Ottawa 20 years ago, and you guys remember Chad Kilger?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I reffed him in the OHL, and so in Ottawa, they had this minor hockey week in which some local referees' kids will come in the dressing room and dress with you, and then they'll go on the ice and skate around and stand there at the national anthem, and we'll talk to them before the game about, you know, what levels they're doing and all that. So they're like 13, 14, 15, and you know, my son plays here in St. Louis. So when I go to a game, you know, I see kids and their pants are too long or they're too short or their shirt looks like three sizes too big for them. And so I'm doing this game in Ottawa and we're skating around with these minor hockey kids. And Chad Kilker comes right up to me and he goes, "Hey, Peelsy," he goes, "I didn't know you were working with Dean Warren tonight." Dean Warren used to be on our staff and he wasn't a very good ref and they let him go. But his pants were always too short. He had like the ear tab still on his helmet. He just didn't, he looked like a minor referee, a minor hockey ref. And so I go to Chad, I go, "I'm not working with Dean Warren tonight. I'm working with, you know, Wes McCauley, whoever." And he goes, no, "There he is over there." And he's I swear to God, at one of the minor hockey kids. And to your point, though, that was the perception that these players had, that they look at him, and he didn't look like a referee. And I remember, and it's, you know, this guy's good friends with you guys, Scott Hartnell. And I was one of the last guys to put a visor on. I didn't want to wear a visor. Well, then in our new CBA back 8-10 years ago, we had to put a visor on. And the first game that I was doing in the preseason, I'm skating around in Columbus and Hartsey's playing for Columbus. And he comes right up to me and he goes, when'd you put the visor on? And I go, and that's my point. Even these guys are sitting on the bench and they're like, "Peelsy's wearing a visor now." Like, you wouldn't think they'd notice things like that, but they do.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100% for sure. Noticed. Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because like I always noticed, like you can tell guys when they're, you know, they take care of themselves the way they look, and
take pride in the way you look.
Yeah,
you look
good. Well, sometimes I wear those you know, those vests that some of the players wear that it's got the cushions in them, and
yeah,
I'd wear those because I was built like a pigeon, so I gotta bulk up a little bit and look like I'm somewhat in shape when I get to the gym once in a while.
Oh, yeah, great,
got man. To. Nasty's probably the best dressed player in the adult league.
Oh, in the adult league?
Oh, yeah. He's got the tongues out, like you said, Kovalev, like the perfect 1 inch between the shin pads and pants.
I actually sew my socks so they're tighter, like Kobe's were. Guys, been playing, and then I step out there and try to play, and that's when it ends. I look good in pictures, though.
Yeah,
right,
exactly. Pictures.
But Timmy, so how did you get your start in officiating? Like when did that start?
Yeah, you know what? It actually started, I mentioned Caddy and working in the pro shop in New Brunswick. So when that fall rolled around, I lived in a small town called Hampton, New Brunswick. It was 20 minutes outside of St. John. St. John had an AHL team, Derek, as you know, for years, the St. John Flames. And actually, Marty St. Louis played there, which is unbelievable. Yep. And so when the fall rolled around, like I said, we didn't have a lot of money and I missed having to spend the money. But so in our town, it was a town of 1,500 people, small Canadian town, one rink. And that's where we were at every day as a kid, was at the rink. And mom and dad, I was 13, and mom and dad were like, "Why don't you start refereeing the 6, 7, 8, 10-year-olds? And I started doing that for, you know, this was back, I was born in 66, so this is 79, 80. And I started reffing the little kids for fun, and then went to the University of New Brunswick, and I lasted a whole 1 year there before they kicked me out because I didn't go to many classes. So, and I just kept refereeing. I kind of enjoyed it. It was that good extra money. And then, as you guys know, the American Hockey League back in the 80s was huge in the Maritimes. They had the Edmonton Oilers farm team in Cape Breton. Toronto and Winnipeg quite often shared the Moncton Hawks, and they were the Moncton Golden Flames at one point. Brett Hull played there. Holly played in Moncton. We had a team in Fredericton, the Fredericton Express, and Claude Julien played for the Fredericton Express, but then they became the Fredericton Canadiens, which was Montreal's farm team. And then we had the team in St. John. So how it works in the American League is the NHL would send in, like I was when I started in 98, I would go to different IHL cities and they would use local linesmen. So I was the local linesman in St. John, Moncton, Fredericton, and, you know, Don Van Massenhoven, Mick Magoo, the different guys before they made it big, they would come in and I'd work the lines in the American League. And I remember in, I think it was in early 90s, I sent a letter to the NHL. I said, I'm interested in becoming an NHL official. And Will Norris at the time was the director of officiating. And he sent me a letter back. And this was in the late 80s, early 90s. And as you guys know, especially in Philly, you know, the Legion of Doom, if you were a small player in the late 80s, early 90s, you weren't getting drafted. And that's why it took a player like Marty St. Louis a long time. And so many young guys that are playing in the NHL now wouldn't have been able to play in that era because they were only drafting guys that were 6 foot and so on. And every linesman that they were drafting, they were signing, they were signing them, they had to be 6 foot plus. And the same thing with referees. You had Don Van Massenhoven and Mick Magoo. And you know, he had the anomaly with Carey Frazier and so on. But most of these refs were taller in stature, and they said I wasn't big enough. So I got my break. The company I worked for moved me to actually transfer me to Toronto, and I got into the OHL. And then lucky enough at the time, the OHL, they scout referees like they scout players. So old names like John D'Amico and Brian Lewis and guys that used to officiate in the NHL, they were now working for the NHL, and they would come out to different games in the OHL. I wouldn't know that they were in the building. And then I was lucky enough that in 98, they offered me a job.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's wow. Awesome. What a ride. So did you actually ever play hockey, like organized hockey, or were you strictly ref?
I did. I was a decent player. I was always a good skater. But I was small. Like, I didn't like the rough stuff. I was a goal scorer, but I didn't make it very far in hockey. And I quickly realized that, you know, as a kid in Canada, as you guys know, everyone dreams, like, this golf course that was beside the trailer park I lived in. And it sounds like such bullshit, but it's the truth for Canadian kids back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And we would lug these nets through the woods, go to hole number 12. It was a par 5. Bottom of the hill, there was a pond. We'd scrape off the pond. We'd be out there all day, you know, all night until we lost the pucks or it was just too dark. And I feel like sometimes I wish my kids had an opportunity to grow up in that environment. You know, we live in a couple cul-de-sacs here in St. Louis, and if I don't see them for a certain period of time, I start to get nervous and I, you know, go look for them and so on. But it was different growing up back then.
Yeah.
And it was a good way of life. It was a simple way of life back then. Not all the social media now that we have.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
And my kids are on the phone and their iPads. And, you know, John Wooden, who was a real famous basketball coach, I think at Georgetown, he had a quote there a couple of years ago. He goes, I hate when I hear that when people say that kids have changed. He goes, kids haven't changed. We're the ones that allow them to change. You know, we do the show, I'm going out to cut my grass. Well, an easy way for me to say, hey, keep busy is go play Xbox or get on your phone or whatever. But my kids are pretty good. Bronson, he's a good little hockey player. And up until this year, he played for Jamal Mayers for the last two or three years in St. Louis. And he's out shooting pucks, and he, you know, I had him at the gym this morning. He wants to go to the gym and work out, and he's 11 years old. I'm like, I love it. He's not drinking soda. He's not, he's like, I'm committed.
That's awesome. So,
yeah.
That's awesome. My son's playing. Unfortunately, he's a goalie. Elvis, fuck. It's funny. A few years back, when he just started, he kind of got thrown into the net, and he liked it. And Ron Hextall was, I was still with the team, and Hex, he was the GM, and he called me Deke. I don't know. He always called him and Mac T. Craig McTavish called me Deke, but he's like, he goes, Deke, you don't want that. he goes, when you get home tonight, he goes, you fire one of those orange hockey balls right off his fucking forehead.
Yeah.
And he'll never want to get there again. I go, Hexy's five. I can't do that. He goes, yes, you can. He goes, trust me. So I didn't do it, but it he's still
enjoying a muffin, so it wouldn't
He said I shoot muffins, so it doesn't matter.
Well, I'm sure you got connections, but it's expensive, man. This bullshit about hockey's for everyone is ridiculous. My kid skates this year are $700, and I look at the price of goalie equipment out there when I go down to our local hockey shop here, and I don't know how some of these families afford it. It's just, it's a travesty what these companies are getting away with charging, really.
It's crazy. I'm fortunate because of obviously working in hockey for 26 years. I've gotten most of Elvis's stuff pretty damn close to free. And it's like you said, it's crazy. I mean, I buy skates and, you know, odd things here and there, but I was fortunate to get a lot of stuff for free. Vaughn is really taking care of him.
Is he a pretty good little goalie?
If he's not around, yeah, he's not bad. I don't want to tell him that, but yeah, he's pretty athletic, and he's unlike me. I played, believe it or not, I played college basketball, even on like very short. His mom's side of the family, they're all tall. So he's just turned 9, and he's up to my shoulder already.
Oh, really?
So he's got a chance. His uncles are 6'4", 6'5", his grandpa's 6'5". Like, so he's got a shot, but I mean, not to make the NHL, but he's decent player. He's, you know, he is what he is. And he's a little fucked up. I don't know where he gets it from.
Yeah,
he's got some issues, Timmy. Yeah. I blame my dad. I blame Sudsy for it. But I had a question for you, because when I was in college, I worked at a High Point University in North Carolina. And once you were a player in college, they had team camps for 8 straight weeks, and you were an official. You got to be a ref. And I always was like, I can't wait till I'm playing in college and I can be a ref. I'll tell you what, man, and I've probably said to you before, like, it is one of the hardest fucking, and that's, I'm talking about high school. You're at the highest level. That is one of the hardest fucking jobs, and I don't know if it's always appreciated. I think guys like Riley, guys that played the game, and guys like me, the equipment guys, the trainers, they understand what you, the pressure and all that stuff. But like, man, like Riley was, I kind of just stole your thunder. You were going to ask him, how did you prepare for like game to game, like going into that kind of situation?
Well, I drank a lot of red wine the night before. And,
sounds familiar.
We did that a lot on the road too, as you guys know, but we had a lot of fun. You know, you gotta have, there's not as much fun now. I don't think with the younger guys, it's a business, and I get that, but you still have to have fun at it. And, but our guys, you know, I'll tell my kids or friends, if we're at a Blues game, I go, just watch the refs when they come out and skate out there now. These guys are incredible athletes. It's not like years ago where, you know, guys were overweight, and it's like that with the players now. It's a 12-month a year job. And a lot of it's physical fitness. If you're, you know, as you guys know, Riley, if you're not in shape, you lose your focus during the game. You know, so our guys are in incredible shape. And basically it comes down to, you know, if I was working a game in Philly, you would have been there, Derek. It was when it was Lindros's first game back to Philly, and he was playing for Toronto. And Don Van Massenhoven and I pull into the rink, and everybody up top there, you know, where they can look down to where the players park and so on. Everyone's got Lindros jerseys on with a big X through them. And we're like, you get pumped up. You get excited for every game. But listen, let's be honest. If it's a Tuesday night in Columbus, and at the time we'll say Carolina is not very good, or you're in Philly on a Saturday night and Toronto's in there and Lindros is there, you're pumped up for this game. And our guys, you know, go into every game prepared. But anyway, Donnie and I were watching the pregame warm-up on the TV in our dressing room. And all of a sudden here, you know, you got Darcy Tucker, Gary Roberts, you got LeClaire, you know, all of the Legion of Doom, you know, and everyone's at center ice shoving and going at it, and they separate on their own. And so we're in the dressing room going, this is going to be fucking fun tonight. This is going to be fun. Like, I would rather a game like that than just a game that there's two tripping penalties the whole game. And
yeah,
you know, anybody could ref that game. You want the games that are tough. So it's just about preparing yourself throughout the day. No different than a player. We get up in the morning, we have breakfast with our team at the hotel, go work out in the morning, have lunch, have the pregame nap. You know, everyone would, I'd love, friends of mine were like, you nap? And I go, yeah, my day's starting at, you know, 5 o'clock or 5:30 when we get to the rink. So it's, you know what, as much fun as we had on the road, you got to get your rest, because, you know, that line, you know, when you're hungover, you got to, you're playing guilty.
Yeah, right.
Playing guilty.
Just a few.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, Timmy? At least you didn't have to do the morning skate like some of the boys. My partner here, like, if he wasn't in the lineup, we would get after it a little bit. Oh, yeah. This poor guy had to go get bag skate. All I had to do was hang jerseys and shit.
Oh yeah. That would have been brutal.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love hearing that you were emotionally connected to the game. Like the players are, it's an interesting perspective. I'm also curious on, like, you know, like how players mentally prepare with a chip on their shoulder, right? A little bit of an ego flex, you know, I have obviously, running into refs that, whether it's something that happened in other games or whatnot, relationships with players, like how you mentally prepare from an ego perspective on how you're going to, you know, kind of come into the game when you're with your presence.
No, that's a great question, Riley, because I think, you know, I was in the league 23 years, and I really think the last 12, 13 years, I think the first 8 or 10 years, I took myself too serious out there. And maybe came across as cocky. And there's a fine line between confidence and cockiness. Sure. Cockiness is no good as an official. You've got to be confident. And I remember Stephen Walkham, who was my boss, he said to me, he goes, I think you take yourself a little too serious out there. And you guys know this guy very well, because you would have seen him a lot, Derek, is Paul Dvorsky.
Yeah,
and
yep.
Paul had one of the best personalities on the ice. He would joke and laugh, but when he had to step in and show his authority, people respected him. And so I think the first few years I took myself, even though I didn't intentionally do it, but when I came in 2000, we were just going into the two referee system. So I'm working with Don Koharski and Kerry Frazier and Mick Magoo and, you know, guys that have big personalities and been around the league for a long time. And I felt like I kind of needed to make my stamp in the game and on staff, instead of maybe just sliding in a little under the radar. And then I found towards the end of my career, it got me a lot more just being down to earth and being approachable and not taking things so serious.
Yeah. I can relate to that from a different perspective, because there's a fine line of, like, yes, you're for sure, for you, position of authority. So you got to have, you know, that flex on it to some degree. You know, and in my role, it was kind of the same thing. It was like, you know, I'm a pretty, like, easygoing guy, but I'm also in a position to, like, I have to flex and, like, you know, and I'm also in a position I have to, like, you know, fight and defend. So I always struggle with that line of, like, how friendly can I be without showing a sign of weakness almost, right? And I'm sure you battled something similar.
Yeah, 100%. You know, that's a great point, because, you don't want to be Bill McCreary, who I think is probably the best referee that ever reffed in the NHL. He could be a real prick out there. But he said to me once, he goes, you never want to be liked by everybody, but you do want to be respected. Mm. And so there's a fine line in getting too close to the players and being buddy-buddy with them, because eventually you're going to have to call a penalty on them and maybe throw them out of the game or call a penalty on them at a crucial point. And he looks at you like, I thought we were buddies. And that's no good, because eventually you're going to have to step in and show your authority. So, you know, one note on Philly, I loved my, well, it was one of my favorite cities to work in. And you guys know the sign guy there.
Oh yeah. He's still floating around.
He's still there.
Yeah. He was there at the end of my career. And so for years I'd come out and he'd hold up the sign, ref, you suck, and blah, blah, blah. So one night he comes over to me at Chickie and Pete's and he's like, hey, Timmy, I'm the sign guy. And I'm like, hey, let me buy you a beer. And we had a bunch of beers together. And he quickly realized, you know what, this guy's a good guy. It's just his role is to, you know, is to call penalties and police the game. And it's not always going to go in the favor of maybe the home team or whatever team. And so he was such a good guy, though, because after that, every game I'd say to the guys in the dressing room, I go, watch for the sign guy. And we'd come out and he'd hold up a sign, welcome back. Every sign.
That's awesome. Back.
Because we weren't friends, but we got to know each other, and he realized like we just had a job to do. Like I remember when I retired and I was allowed to go on social media, I'd get fans from every city going, "You hated Montreal, you hated Toronto, you hated what?" I'm like, "No, actually, like I'd always loved the Toronto fans, so you hated Toronto." I'm like, "I grew up a Toronto fan. Like I
didn't, yeah, right.
I didn't hate the Toronto Maple Leafs. First of all, you guys haven't got out of the second round in 19 years.
Yeah, right.
But you want to blame the refs every year. Like, gosh." And it was funny, you know, to hear the fans saying, you hated our team. And I couldn't have been any further from the truth.
Yeah.
It's funny. Like, it's your job. Like, you have to make those calls. And, you know, it is funny how people think that.
Yeah. Though. Like, it's a thankless job, right? I mean, it's like you can't do anything right. Because no matter what side you're calling.
Well, one team's going to be mad, right? Like, it doesn't matter.
Somebody's going to be mad at you. You know?
I got a question for you. And we've talked about this a lot when things like this happen. The players these days, like say you're officiating the game and there's a guy and he's like going to be hit. Right. But he turns himself last second and then it's a hit from behind. Like, and they don't seem to protect themselves anymore, like by putting their hands or anything. Like how hard was that for you? Because you know, like that's one of those things. Like you see it, guy goes down, like
it looks awful.
It looks awful. But at this part, to me, I didn't play the game. He did, but yeah. I'm like, this guy turned last second, and you know, we don't have to tell you how fast the game is. Like, what's a guy supposed to do? Like, you know, in that situation, if you're going in to make that hit, where it would have been a clean hit to the side, but the guy turns last second.
Well, you know what? That's really what differentiates a good official or an average official. So there's 34 refs in the NHL. They take 20 to the playoffs every year. 14 guys go home. And the guys that go home are, or the guys that continue to work, are the guys that can differentiate whether the guy turned at the last moment or he didn't. And you're not always going to get it right, because our job is to protect the players. That's what our number one job is as an official in the NHL, is to protect the official or protect the players. And so it's a great point you brought up, because it happens a lot these days. But as an official, you've got to have, that's what separates the Wes McCauley's from the guy that's number 34 on staff, is you've got to read the play and say, hey, I'm sorry you're hurt. And you go over to the coach or you talk to the captain and say, but he turned at the last moment. And there's nothing that it's completely different than when the guy's looking at the numbers and he comes in and hits somebody.
Right.
But the guy turns quickly, that onus is on him.
Yeah, that discernment is important. And just like to what Nasty was saying, like I almost feel like players today almost use that as a defense mechanism. It's almost like strategy to some degree. Like I grew up in, you know, a little bit of the old school era where it's like you protect yourself, like you don't put yourself in a vulnerable situation, where now it's almost, it's either not being taught or it's some bit of strategy to almost, you know, lure a guy into a penalty. But it's got to be challenging, you know, the speed of the game, like that discernment, you know. But you're saying, like, obviously guys are good enough at observing that. But, you know, do you guys have these internal dialogues before games of like guys that do stuff like that to maybe look out for that?
Yeah, for sure. And the league does a good job monitoring embellishment. They called it diving. I don't think the Players Association liked we would announce the penalty as, you know, so-and-so 2 minutes for diving. You're kind of embarrassing the player when you call him a diver. So they change the verbiage to embellishment. And it makes me think about a player, Michael Bunting, playing for Toronto last year. I'm watching this game and he takes a stick right here and he snaps his head back and the ref got sucked in, because high sticking is a tough penalty to get in real time. It happens so quick. Yeah. Other sticks are there and he got the power play. And so what happens is our guys, after every game, whether it's, you know, having a glass of wine in my room by myself after the game and looking at certain clips, I would watch every game, even the next day if I'm traveling, and I put on my game. And towards probably the last 6-7 years of my career, it wasn't really critiquing the penalties that I was calling. It was more my positioning, because I was getting older. I had to read the play. You know, you got Connor McDavid coming down on you skating forward. I'm 55. I'm 55 years old skating backwards. You know, I felt like one of those turnstiles of the runway, right? And so I had to read the play, and I would more look at my positioning and where I was. But those type of players put the officials in a bad spot, because what happens is a player Nazem Kadri, when he was in Toronto, I would say to the guys, if you're going to call a high, it was almost like clockwork. If Toronto was down and he would be on the ice in the last couple of minutes, he's going to grab his face at one point because he's trying to get us to call a high sticking penalty. And I would say, I wouldn't say to the guy, don't call it, but if you're going to call it, you better be 100% sure that he got high sticked in the face. Because if not, we're doing a disservice to the game and the team that they're playing by giving them an advantage that was an unfair advantage. It wasn't warranted. So certain players dig their own grave, and yeah, it takes a while for them to sometimes get out of that. You know, I remember Max Lapierre, he played for Montreal, and I was in the playoffs 1 year, and that was the year Price either got hurt or was playing so-so. And I don't know if you remember this, Nasty, but Yaroslav Halak was playing for Montreal, and they were playing Washington, and he stopped like 65 shots in one game. He was unbelievable. And I went into work game 6 with Dan O'Rourke, and the league was on us about calling embellishment. And we called, Dan and I called 3 embellishment penalties against Montreal in the Bell Center in game 6. One of them was against Brian Gionta. He did a barrel roll. And the other 2 were against Lapierre. And I remember throwing my arm up for the third one, the second one against Lapierre. And I remember throwing my arm up. It was like the second round of the playoffs. And I go, well, and I'm thinking about this. I go, well, this might be the last penalty I call in the playoffs this year, because they're either going to send me home or they're going to be happy that I called it. And so Lapierre was known to embellish all the time, throw himself into the boards, grab his face. And it puts the officials in a tough position, because 99% of the players are honest players.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's got to piss you off as an official. Yeah. It could, like you said, you get turned one way, you can't tell. A guy throws their head back, and then you see it probably, or after the game you find out, you're like, that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that sucks.
Actually. Yeah, it's got to be a challenging piece of it. And then, like, you know, so that being said, you know, we're talking about embellishment, but just like dealing with players like in that world where some guys have, you know, obviously bigger egos, bigger chips on their shoulders, going into games, coaches that have the, you know, similar type of tendencies, like, is your mental preparation like, oh, I got to deal with this, and I have some sort of strategy on how you're going to communicate with some of these guys?
Yeah,
it's got to be challenging, right?
Some guys, you know, especially the like, you know, a couple of my best buddies here in St. Louis are Reed Lowe and Kelly Chase and Cam Jansen, you know, and, you know, guys like Riley, guys that played the game, we knew what their role is. I can never remember having a bad relationship with an enforcer on the team because they knew they were honest players. They respected the officials. They knew the linesmen sometimes were going to be their best friends. If they were happened to be not doing so well in the fight, the linesman was going to go in and protect them. And it was the little rats on the ice that made it difficult for us because they would pretend like they're your buddy, but then when you turned your head, they're poking somebody behind the knees or they're doing something dirty. And so I didn't have a lot of respect for those guys and subsequently, I probably didn't have good relationships with them, and I kept them at arm's length because I knew I couldn't trust them. I knew they were working me to get an angle,
right,
so that they could, you know, when I wasn't looking, give somebody a cheap shot. And just, you know, didn't have a lot of respect for players like that.
Yeah.
Well,
it's funny because I think the feeling is the same for us, right? Is like guys that are honest versus, they would call them snakes, rats, whatever term you want to put on it. But yeah, there's a lack of trust, you know, like it's hard to, you know, it's hard to think that these guys are genuinely, you know, your friend or, you know, brushing shoulders for an honest reason. But I guess that's the game, right? You know, these guys, it's obviously a lack of confidence to some degree for these guys, because otherwise they wouldn't have to feel the need to do that. But
right,
there's always going to be those guys, and there still is to some degree.
And in fairness to them, there's a reason some of them last for a long time because they're good at it.
Yeah, right. Good point.
So credit to them. You know, I never played in the NHL, and some of them have played a lot of games, and so everybody has their role, and it's our job to police it the right way and call an even and fair game. Like, that's all I ever tried to do, was make sure it was even and fair for both teams. And you know, you never wanted a team or the coach to leave or the, you know, to go and he really screwed us tonight intentionally. You know, you know, that old adage, you know, if nobody knows who the refs are, then they probably did a good job.
Yeah.
There's a lot of validity to that. And you just want to be fair, and you don't want to be the factor on why a team won or lost.
Right. Now, that being said, any beef with, say, a coach where you kind of, you know, reflect on the way he spoke to you and you say, motherfucker, I'm going to show him type of deal. Anything like that, or try not to.
It's funny because you guys had him in Philly for a long time. A lot of our refs didn't like Vigneault for some reason. And you know, he's got that squeaky voice a little bit. And he tended to chirp a lot from the bench. But I always liked Delan. I respected him. I always got along with him. Same with Tortorello. A funny story. It was he was coaching in Columbus, and Nick Foligno was the captain of Columbus. And when I was in the minor leagues, I had Mike Foligno, their dad, was coaching Hershey. And I screwed up a call one night, and I went over to Mike, and he's the head coach. You know, he's part of Colorado's organization then. And I explained to him that I got the call wrong. And he was like, Timmy, we're in the American League for a reason. We're all trying to get better. And hopes that we can all make it the NHL. And he was just such a man about it, and not demeaning, and so professional with me. And so when Marcus and Nick came in the league, I always had a soft spot for both of them. And, you know, I loved how they play, but Nick was the leader in Columbus. And one night I called a penalty against him in Montreal, and he goes, "You don't fucking respect me. You don't fucking respect me." And it bothered me for weeks. And the first game that I had Columbus again was in Columbus, and we show up at the game, myself and the other three officials, and put our equipment bag in the room, and I said, I'll be right back, and I didn't tell them what I was doing, and I go knock on Torts' door, and Bradshaw opens the door, and I know Shazzy well, and I'm like, hey, can I speak to Nick? And he goes, sure, come on in. And Torts is like, yeah, you want to speak to Nick? And I go, yeah. So he goes and gets Nick, and Nick comes in, and I said, you said something to me a few weeks ago that I didn't respect you. And I go, I couldn't be further from the truth. You're the leader of this team. I love you fight, you score. I've got a tremendous amount of respect for you. And you know the relationship I have with your dad. I said, I just want you to know that I do respect you. And we hugged it out, and he leaves, and Torts looks at me and goes, we fucking need more of that. That's awesome. I never wanted a player to not think that I didn't respect them. You know, I may not like their style they play, or they might have caused me a lot of grief, but I respected all the players and the coaches. And when you talked about the coaches, you know, we have a lot of good people in this game, and I would always say to them, hey, we're all in this together, man. Like, it's a fucking war out here right now, and I'm gonna do the best I can. You got to control your players, and I know you're going to not agree with every call I make. And funny story, it was my 1,000th game, and I was working it in St. Louis, and night before the game, my crew was staying at the Ritz-Carlton in Clayton there in St. Louis. And Joel Quenneville was there. And Joel and I always had a good relationship when he was in St. Louis, and now he was working for the Blackhawks. So we had a couple drinks that night together, and I love Q, and hopefully he'll be back in the league soon. I'm sure he will. And so 1,000th game, they bring my wife and kids out and give you flowers, and they give you, you know, the players are giving you sticks and jerseys, and you know, it's a feel-good moment. Everyone's all happy. Well, the first 5 minutes of the game, we got two headshots. Bacchus. No, it was a shit show. And Bacchus and Taze, the two captains, are fighting in the first period. Quenville standing on the bench just fucking yelling at me. He would be the type of guy you'd see him after, and he's like, hey, PLD, you want to grab a beer or something?
Yeah.
So, but in the heat of the battle, it was, you know, there were no friends in the heat of the battle. Oh. Like, you know, they were looking for every advantage they could get. And I remember we might have had a few pops the night before my 1,000th game. And so we come in after the dress room afterwards, and I was working with Kelly Sutherland, Brad Kovacic, and Derek Amell. And they looked at me and they go, next time you have a milestone game, could you maybe work it with like Florida or something? But I mean, Chicago, St. Louis, it was just a war the whole night. It was fun.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Oh, man.
That's awesome. I did know you had your 1,000th game there. I was talking to Birdie earlier today, Bert Godin, who was a former equipment manager and good friends with Chad O'Neill as well. I know you know both of them well. Yeah. Two really good friends of mine. I had a quick story I have to tell you about Birdie. So we did the 2016 World Cup together, right? Yeah. Actually, we did a World Championship together. I think we did the one in Latvia together.
Yeah, your those pictures of you guys doing those are in his shop. So I go down and get I think you were doing it. And when he left the Blues they let him go.
Yeah.
I still go down and get my son's skate sharpened with Bert. And I love Bert, as you know. Tremendous guy. But he's got those pictures of you guys.
Oh, that's cool.
On those teams. Yeah.
So I'm always, Riley can tell you, I do stupid shit I think's funny, but it's just,
you do?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. So Birdie, he's like, he was always like, man, I wish we could work together more because like no one ever fucks with me and you just fuck with me all day. Like and Ray Barilli would just be dying laughing. So I don't know why, but I had this, we're in Columbus. We started camp and the guys had come in and we're pulling all their bags and separating everything, putting their USA bags, getting their gear together and all this stuff because the next day we have practice. And Birdie's always, he's always on his phone. It would take him to do 20 pairs of skates about 5 hours. This guy, he's got the machine fucking running, like talking to me. And I'm like, Birdie, go finish the skates, man. So anyway, he's in the middle of the locker room in Columbus. And I'm just like, I'm going to fuck with him. So I come by and act like I'm on my phone. And I'm like, Dean Lombardi was the GM. And I'm like, hey, Dino, what's up? Birdie's head whips around. He wants to know what's going on, right? And he says, and I'm like, oh shit, okay, we can add a player now. I thought it was too late. All right, Harry, let me grab a pen. Birdie's like, who is it? Wait, what's going on? What's going on? And I'm like, hang on. So I act like I'm writing this shit down. So I hang up and he goes, what's going on, man? And like, he's so hyper, right? Like, he's like my dad. Like, he worked for my dad, Sudsy, when my dad was with the Flyers in Maine, Portland, Maine.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we just added some dude, Felix Slazenger. And he says, what? And I say, I was Dino. And he goes, Where the fuck's he play? I said, I guess he's some college phenom. He's right on Hockey DB. He's fucking going, right? So I act like my phone rings again. I'm like, what number? You know, like we say 87, like some number. And I'm like, all right, let me call. I got to get nameplates made right away. And Birdie's like, right, like following me all through the room, right? So he's like, are you fucking around? I can't find a Felix Slazenger. I'm like, Slazzy? I'm like, so now I'm saying Slazzy, right? So the next morning, he's like, fuck. He goes, I love you. Fuck around with me. And I'm like, I said, the guy's coming in. I'm not fucking around. And he's like starting to believe me, right? He goes, why can't I find this guy? I'm like, I don't know, man. Ask Dino. So I go to Dean and the guys are going on the ice. And I said, listen to me. I'm going to go on the bench. And I said, can you just walk by and ask me if I've got Felix all taken care of with his gear? So I'm standing there. 2 minutes later, Dean Lombardi comes walking by. He's going to sit with Homer up in the stands. He goes, hey, Nast. He goes, is Felix all set? You good with him? And I'm like, oh, yeah, he's good. You know, all his shit's coming in tomorrow. He's like, all right, thanks, man. Sorry for the last minute. He walks up, Bert's fucking like, holy fuck. He's like, what the fuck? So now I got the player saying to Birdie, we're Slazzy. So finally I had to tell him, obviously it was bullshit, but the whole World Cup, we were terrible. We lost every fucking game, but we always say Slazzy, like, how's Slazzy doing?
Maybe because you're Slazzy.
He was in for 3 days. He thought this guy was coming in, Felix Slazenger.
Bert's the best. You know what? It's a lot of our guys, sometimes, not a lot of our guys, some of our guys would take advantage of the equipment managers. And, you know, some of my best buddies were Bert and Pete Rogers in Nashville. Yeah. And, you know, these guys do so much for us. You know, like we carry two sets of underwear and so on.
Right.
And, you know, it's not very glamorous, but as a ref, we get all excited that there was a washer and dryer at the Marriott we're staying at so we could wash our stuff after the game. But if not, we'd give it to the guys before the game and ask them if they could wash it and so on, and sharpening skates and fixing equipment. And you know, it's you guys were a big part of the success of our guys, because without you guys, you know, we didn't have anybody to take care of us.
Yeah, no, I had a good guy there. Eddie took it and Phil.
Oh, I loved Eddie.
He was unreal. Like, I didn't even have to check on Eddie. Every time I would see one of you guys, they'd be like, Eddie's got us. You know, like he was great. And he's still there.
Eddie would always be, Susie'd come in though, he'd be looking at the counter to see where the money was that we used for mail. he was looking. He'd be back a few minutes later. You guys need
to see if that cash is up there.
I never saw you on the massage table, Flyers massage table, like Carey Fraser.
Getting
the morning massages.
No, but that, who's that guy? Is he Russian, or who's the guy you had in Philly in the back room there? It's like a chiropractor massage guy.
Oh, who's it might have been Tommy. I don't know. We had a few. Tommy, we had Jack Bradsmith. We had a few.
Tommy, I think he wasn't Russian. Yeah, yeah. And man, if I was sore or something, you know, I don't know how some of our guys did it, because we're flying commercial. We're not on charters. You got Mike Civic, who as a linesman, he was 6'8" without skates on.
Yep.
And now he's got to fly on a commercial plane. And no wonder his back was always all fucked up and he had to go see you guys because, you know, I'm 5'10" on a good day and I had all kinds of leg room. Yeah. Poor Sibby, he'd have to put his big, you know, legs out in the aisle and so on. And every once in a while I'd get a massage from the guy in Philly, but they were always busy, so.
Yeah, they were good. We had good guys. The Mascoosas were good dudes we had there. Timmy, got to ask you, obviously, about the bad situation where I think I heard you say, I just said the wrong thing. It came out wrong on the hot mic, the whole situation. It was a shame because you were a month away from your last game, which would have been in St. Louis, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm surprised you heard about it.
Yeah, no, it wasn't much said, but.
No, it was only on Fox and CNN.
Was it on Time Magazine or something?
It was in People Magazine.
People Magazine, sorry.
People, yeah. Yeah, it's funny because it's actually taken me a lot longer to get over it than I thought it would, and I'm still not over it. And I don't mind saying to you guys, I reached out to Chaser and Glenn Healy probably a month ago because I was still struggling with it. And the PA hooked me up with a guy to speak to here in St. Louis. And I've been seeing him once a week. And because when it ended, there's not a day that literally not one day that goes by that I don't think about how my career ended. And it was literally, it happened March 24th. And my final game in St. Louis was April 24th, 4 weeks later. And the Blues had made tickets up, Tim Peel's final game. I had 150 people. The Blues had given me a couple suites, Big Walt. Everybody was coming to the game. That game, it was an afternoon game. I picked it on April 24th because it was a 2 o'clock game. We were going to the country club that I'm a member at and having a party thereafter at 7. It was just going to be an awesome day. And so the day that of my situation, I was walking around after lunch in Nashville. And to my point earlier about the equipment guys, I wasn't going to see Nashville again. So I went out and bought a nice bottle of Camus wine. Before the game, I walk down, I got a coffee and a dip in, and I go into Pete Rogers' office and I'm sitting there and I give him this bottle and I said, I'm not going to probably see you again. And I want to thank you for everything you've done for me over my career. And Todd Richards is in there and he was an assistant coach at the time for John Hines. And, we're just sitting around shooting the shit. My daughter's a horseback rider. We're talking about horses and our kids and nothing to do with the game that night. And so finally I'm like, hey, I got to get out of here. And I leave. And, the last couple of weeks before that, I just wanted to get in, do my games, get out, no controversy, not piss anybody off. I wasn't going in there thinking that I just wanted to get in and out and ride off into the sunset. And so we go do the game and I call a penalty against Nashville and my verbiage just came out wrong. I said I wanted to get a fucking penalty against Nashville. It sounded like I really wanted to get a penalty against Nashville. And I think we had one penalty in the game so far. And I was working with a veteran, Kelly Sutherland, and the play happened literally 10 feet in front of him, and I should have just let it go because he had a good look at it. And I thought Arvidsson kicked the feet out from the Detroit player. And so when I came over the box, it was more me but being embarrassed because Kelly's, he's worked 10 Stanley Cup finals, and here I am from the neutral zone calling a tripping penalty. It wasn't like it was a high stick or a high flagrant foul. And I go, yeah, it wasn't much, but I wanted to get a penalty against Nashville. Well, I didn't want to get it. We called, I think the entire game, we called two penalties against Nashville, maybe one against Detroit. So game ends, Nashville wins. Nobody's saying a word. Well, the Detroit feed picked it up, but they didn't air it. The Nashville feed picked it up and aired it. And obviously within 30 seconds later, it's on social media and running rampant. So we come in and my phone's ringing. As soon as I sit down, it's Stephen Walken, my boss. And he goes, "We got a big problem."
Oh boy.
And I go, "What's that?" He goes, "You're caught on the mic saying you wanted to get a penalty." And I go, "Stephen, that wasn't the case." So I quickly shower. I go down and I talk to John Hines. David Poyle had already left the rink. His PR person put me on the phone with David Poyle. Said, "David, that was not my intent to," and he goes, "I know." And John was awesome. And so I'm back at the hotel and I'm talking to Wes McCauley, the president of our association. First, when I get off the phone in the dressing room, Sudsy and the two linesmen are looking and going, like, because it was really a nothing game. Nothing was going on. And they're like, "What's going on?" And I go, "I may get fired tonight." And they go, "What?" And I go, "Yeah." I go, "I may get fired." So I get back to the hotel and write a letter to Mr. Bettman and Bill Daly and Coley and Steven and say, "This is not what I meant, blah, blah, blah." And show up at the airport the next morning because I'm told to go home that night. And 7:30 in the morning, I'm at the airport. And my phone rings and Steven, he goes, "You worked your last game in the National Hockey League." And I said, I knew the decision was made. So I literally, it was a 2 second conversation. I didn't grovel. I didn't, I said, "No, I didn't say, oh, don't do it." I go, "Okay." I said, "I got to let you go. I got to get on my plane." So I get on the plane. I don't have time to call my wife. I get on the plane. Now it's all over social media, the news and so on. So my wife's getting text messages from her girlfriend saying, "Are you okay? I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah." And she's like, now she's got to look it up. So I get home. So as I'm driving home, like 8:39 in the morning, my phone is obviously blowing up. It's like when I scored the goal off my crotch and that's a funny story. Gretzky texts me that night. He goes, "You've only got 755 goals before you Brett Hull." And I laughed with my wife because I said, "I guess I've arrived." I said, "Wayne Gretzky's texting me." So
yeah.
Now I'm driving home and I get this Columbus number and I don't know who it is. And it's David Clarkson. And David hated officials, hated ref. I thought he hated me. And I thought when I answered the phone, he said, "Hey, Tim, David Clarkson," I thought he was going to say, "It looks fucking good on you. I never liked you, blah, blah, blah." And he had played with Marty Brodeur in Jersey. And I was friends with Marty and golfed with him in the summertime. And he phoned Marty and asked for my number, which I was impressed with. And he's like, "I just want to let you know." He goes, "I'm retired now. I live in Denver, playing with a lot of ex-pros. We got off the ice today. We heard about what happened. And I just want to say, when I saw your name on the board in our room before a game, I knew we had one of the best refs in the league, but I also knew we had one of the fairest refs in the league." And I said, "David, thanks for that. It means a lot." So I had a lot of those phone calls that morning. And now I get home and my wife's crying and I'm crying. And it's a fucking shit show.
Yeah.
And Chaser, I'm talking to Chaser that morning. And so now it's 1:30. My kids are still at school. Now I got to tell them that they're not going to get, because they were pumped about going to my last game. And it was supposed to be fun. They come in the dressing room after the game and Holly and Chaser and Walt and everybody would be in the room and my family. And it was supposed to be a fun time. And now I got to tell them. And so Chaser calls me at like 1:30 and he goes, "Say, I got some bad news for you." And I go, "You got some fucking bad news for me." "Have you seen the day I'm having?" He goes, "Bobby Plager just got killed in a car accident."
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. Fuck.
So social media in St. Louis quickly changed from me to Bobby Plager. And Chaser loves telling the stories. Like, he goes, "Yeah," he goes, "I said to Peelsy," he goes, "Bobby loved you so much, he thought he'd take the heat off you that day." And so now the kids get home and this is 2021, so they're 9 and 7, and I get on my knee and I got to look at them, and they knew Bobby and Bronson, and he'd always say hi to Bronson at the games and or at the rink, and because his grandson played, and I tell him that Bobby had passed away, and I'm crying, and now I got to tell him that your dad's done. You're not going to get to see him rough a game again. So it was brutal. It was a tough day. But it was the calls that I remember that day. Roenick called me, Quenneville called me. I could go on and on. Brian Burke, the Sutters, presidents and coaches of teams, a lot of players, text messages from a lot of players that I didn't have their number. And, you know, at the time I didn't have a lot of current players' numbers, and it made it helped a bit. But it was still difficult. But you know what, like as tough as it is, like I said, say to people, I go, listen, I was adopted. I was in an orphanage for a short period of time. I lived in a trailer park. I didn't have the best life growing up. Somehow I got to the NHL and had a great career. And now it's time to show some balls and not hide in the basement and feel bad about yourself, because you've got two young kids that you've got to be a role model for. And I have these referee camps in St. Louis. And I said to them one day at this camp, I go, life's pretty, because they wanted to hear my story. And I go, life's pretty good right now. You're in high school, like mom and dad probably bought you a car, got a girlfriend, life's pretty good. But I go, guess what? You're going to get kicked in the balls a lot throughout your life. And it's about how you come out on the other side and how you prevail and your perseverance and resiliency. And as much as I sound like I'm, you know, that's where I'm headed and so on, it still bugs me. And that's why I need to go and I'm speaking to somebody to try to get past that and quit worrying about really what other people think. Because my friends, just to wrap this up, because I don't want to bore you, but a couple weeks later after my incident, we had people at our house, and one of my good friends down the street, I said to him, because I kind of tell everyone's a little walking on eggshells, and I'm like, hey, everything's okay, everything's fine, let's have fun tonight. And he looked at me, and he's in front of everybody, he goes, Peelsy, he goes, you're not our friend because you were an NHL ref. He goes, you could have been a garbage man. We're our friend because we know what type of person you are and the heart you have for people. And so that helped. But yeah, it sucks, because it still bothers me. That wasn't the way it was supposed to end. But guess what? I guess you can't write your own story, and you've got to find a way to get past it and move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a shitty situation, because like like you said, it came out the wrong way, but how many times? It's way worse, probably.
I mean,
it's not even like it's not even close. I mean, you even guys come back to the bench and be like, this guy, he just told me he's going to fuck me. You know, like he's going to fuck me. But, you know, like it's just a shame it happened to you. You're such a good dude, man.
I think a lot of it was the NHL that just brought on gambling partners. And it was kind of new to the. It was very new. They had just brought them on that for that season, and I think that was a big part of it. And then at the end of the day, it's kind of the world we're living in now. You know, yeah. I mentioned Roenick before. Like he makes a comment about, you know, one of his people that he works with. Well, she and his and JR's wife are best friends. Like friends.
Exactly.
Like,
they canceled.
He just said a stupid thing. Yeah. He didn't mean anything by it. And it's like the cancel culture that we're living in now. It's like if somebody says the wrong thing, man, they are on you right away. And it's not right, you know, but it's the world we're living in. And I guess we all need to adjust. So.
Yeah. We're all under a microscope with social media, especially in, you know, your position and in that time and space. But yeah, I think there's always like, and you obviously probably have noticed this, there's so many lessons, hard lessons in these difficult situations, right? And I think you're probably still unpacking it a little bit. But that's just life. It's just constantly throwing shit sandwiches at you. And you know, like, you know, it's like you have this grand plan, but you know, sometimes some things you just, you know, you can't fully control. And I think you're going to probably find some peace in it all, you know, somewhere down the line. You know, there's probably something to really dig out of it.
I think so. You know, I'm a big believer in things happen for a reason. And I'm not, my wife's certainly way more religious than I am. But And I think she'd like me to be a bit more, but I am a big believer in things happen for a reason. And at the end of the day, like, you know, here in St. Louis, nobody gives a shit that, you know, I'm coaching, you know, a couple teams, and whether I'm at the golf course or wherever, nobody gives a shit. Like at the end of the day, people just care about what kind of person you are.
And that's it.
Everyone's got a story, and they just, you know, is this guy a good guy or is he a bad person? And that's how you need to live your life. And it's tough though, because I am a sensitive guy. I know that. So for a while, it really bothered me. Like, I'd walk into a rink and you know, is everyone talking about me? Is everyone saying, hey, there's Tim Peel? Everyone's moved on from that. Nobody gives a shit. So
yeah,
what I need to do is move on a little bit quicker than I have.
Well, it's tough. I mean, I went through the same thing, as you know. Right. Yeah, I worked for the Flyers for 25 years, and you know, you got people say, you know, everyone's calling, I'm sorry, you know, like this and that, and things happen for a reason, and you're like, fuck you, it does. Like, yeah, you know, this and that, that's not helping me right now. But now, you know, it took me a while, but things have, you know, I see a lot different now, like with what I do. And
you were hurt.
Yeah, right? Oh yeah, yeah. Big time. It's like you said, I connected with me right away. It's just like, first thing is I'm like, what do they think? Like, what is everyone? I can't say anything. What are people going to think of me? Like, I was, you know, taking my kid to the rink and everybody knew, you know, not that I was by any means famous or anything, but a lot of people knew who I was. And in my head, I'm like, are they looking at me saying, oh, you know, what did he do? He had to have done something. Right. Like, so anyway, but
no, and you know what though, like, you cannot, and I refuse to live my life like this. You can't blame anybody else. I can't blame the NHL. I'm the one that said it. Everything I have is because of the National Hockey League. Gary Bettman and I and Bill Daly, I've met with them and I've told them that was not what I meant. You know, I just met with them 6-8 months ago about some things, and I would never. They were tremendous to me. You know, financially, things could have been different, maybe with my retirement and severance package. They could have maybe fired me with cause. They didn't do any of that. They treated me and my family very well. And I get it. They had to protect the shield. And you can't blaming other people serves no purpose.
That's right.
We have to be, and then we need more of that in our world, because everybody wants to fucking blame everybody else instead of looking at themselves. And we need people to be more accountable.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like, I don't know this, but I feel like the person you are, they knew that. And that's why you were looked after, you know, the way they did, because they know who you are. And anyone I've ever talked to and anyone that knows you around hockey knows what kind of guy you are. So,
well, yeah, like, I didn't all of a sudden say, 4 weeks before I was going to retire, and I think I'm going to fucking blow this up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
After 1,362 games, I'm going to say something.
Yeah.
And our guys on staff, like, I can't even think of anybody that's been on staff that I worked with and after they retired, like, guys that went into a game going, I'm going to get this team, or I'm going to get, like, you don't last for as long as I did or other referees, if that's your mindset, because that's, you know, that's not who we are. Like, that's not, we're there to serve the game and make it, like I said earlier, fair for both teams. And we would never go in with that kind of mindset.
Yeah. And we live in a world of social media, right? Obviously the gambling thing's brought in. But the reality is you owned it, and every single one of us on this planet is fucked up in some way, shape, or form. You know, we all got our own issues and stuff. So anybody that's sitting there casting stones, you know, obviously is not being reflective of, you know, of their own situation and their own shit. But, you know, all you can do is be accountable, own it, and, you know, and move on. Right. I mean, it is what it is. It's like, it's unfortunate, but if it was 20 years ago, it'd probably be a non-issue. Honestly, right. I mean, it's like probably not even talked about.
No.
Just a day and age, you know, you gotta be cameras everywhere, right? Bugs everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta be careful.
Yeah, you see everyone always doing this now. Like,
I know, right?
Even talk to them. Like, I don't blame them, really.
Yeah, I know. It's an interesting world.
I do have one more question for you, Timmy. We appreciate your time. So I know you're golfing. You belong, Riley. You should have Riley.
Yeah, right.
Riley loves golf. I'm kidding. He had a good showing a few weeks ago.
Yeah. No, I don't mind.
We played the Friars alumni, and Riley hit some big putts. But a little birdie told me you like to give your money away to the chiropractor there for St. Louis.
So
you played him a lot.
Yeah. Well, Mike Murphy, he's the chiropractor for the Blues. Yeah. And I joke with Panger. I go, I'm because him and I play a lot of golf together, and I always joke with both of them that I'm their human ATM machine. So, but I have got better the last. I'm 10 handicap, and I got.
Oh shit, that's good. Well, that's not bad.
And I'm gonna brag here. I was club champion last weekend. We had three.
No.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 72 holes of match play, and I was four up. This is a funny story. I was four up with 12 to go in the championship match. And I lose, and my wife, and there's all kinds of people in the carts driving around watching and so on. And I lose 12, 13, 14, and 15. I'm leaking oil bad. So now we're even going into 16, and I scraped out a win on 16 and 17 to close them out.
Oh, man.
It's so funny because I could go into Philly or a playoff game in Montreal with 20,000 crazy fans and they're chanting "ref, you suck" and not even, it doesn't even bother you, but you get over a 4-foot putt that you need to make for par to win this match and you're shitting your pants.
Tighten up.
Yeah. Cause it's so out of your comfort zone. It's not what you're used to. So
it makes you appreciate those guys like the, you know, in the PGA. It's right? Like, it's insane. Like he said, when I play in my, member guest with my stepdad, I'm nervous, yeah, man. Like, yeah, I don't know if I ever got nervous playing basketball. Like, I just didn't feel it like that, but it's crazy. Yeah. You're right, man. It's a different feeling when you got people watch. Give me four people. You know,
you're teeing off and
there's like six people watching. You're like, fuck, I gotta hit this thing straight.
A lot of pressure. A lot of mind games. Man.
But that's awesome. Hey, have you played with Craig Berube? Have you been able to play golf with Chief?
I have played with Chief a couple times, yeah. He's
pretty good, eh?
He's a pretty good player, yeah.
He's got pretty good mitts for a big guy.
Yeah. I texted him a couple weeks ago to say, hey, when you get back, let me know so we can tee it up. Chief's a great guy. He's one of my favorite guys here. He's just, you know, just such a good person. And hopefully they can turn it around this year. They didn't, I think their defense kind of let them down last year. Bennington actually played unbelievable last year. But they got some good young players. And Doug Armstrong, as you know, both you guys know, he's one of the best GMs in the business. So we need the Blues back in the playoffs because our Cardinals suck this year. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, man. Beauty. Timmy, seriously, we can't thank you enough, man. We really appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, this is great.
Boys, I appreciate you guys having me on, and maybe we'll do it again once the season gets going and talk some hockey. So
there you go.
I see you guys are both doing well. So
thank you.
Appreciate you, Tim.
Thanks, boys.
All right, brother.
Take care. Big thank you to Timmy Peel. What a beauty.
Absolute beauty. Love that guy.
Appreciate his time.
Yeah, he's awesome, man.
Interesting character for sure. What a career.
Thank God we didn't have mics on us once in a while.
Would have been canceled 20 years ago.
Just think about all the times and then, you know, just a shitty situation. But luckily, he's handled it great.
Yeah.
And he was at the end of his, you know, he had a month left. It would have been nice if he could have got that last game in St. Louis.
Sure.
But they had the big party, like he said, and at his country club. So great guy. It was one of my favorite refs to ever talk to. I really liked him, so.
Yeah, big thanks,
Wish
Timmy.
Wish you the best, yep.
No doubt. It's that time, Nast.
Is it that time?
It really is.
It's time, baller, for the Clear Questions, brought to you by Clear Rum. Riles, if you go to clearrum.com/shop and type in Nasty 2023, you get 35% off your order.
Whew.
Only in PA.
Only in PA.
So, everyone in Pennsylvania, you'll want to get your hands on it. It's the most refreshing summer drink you'll get. It's awesome. Love these guys.
You might want to tone it down. Some are getting carried away with the beverages.
I've gotten carried away, but I've had fun with it. Yes, and it's so tasty, I don't care.
And it's water, so you're hydrating.
Exactly.
So you're all
exactly.
good.
And they're great people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, Bobby, we're good to go.
Nine Springer Nine over on Twitter. He wants to know, ever go fishing with Mike Richards?
Wow. He is a fisherman.
He really is.
I have not actually fished with him, but I've been on his boat.
What were you doing on that boat?
Well, I'll tell you what I was doing. I was having a tasty beverage. It wasn't a clear rum because they weren't there yet. But I was sitting right beside this silver trophy. I don't know. Maybe the Stanley Cup.
Oh, okay.
I was on his boat. Yeah, we took it over. We did his second party. Went up to Kenora there. So I have been on his boat, have not fished. But that silver cup got some, it was like fishing with dynamite for the girls wanting to get in that boat.
I'm sure.
But no, I have not fished with him. But Dustin Bufflin, our good friend, he fishes with him once in a while, and he's a big fisherman. But I have not fished with him. No.
We got one from Skyler Flyers over on Twitter. Which current NHL player reminds you of yourself, Riley?
Ooh, is there anybody that can't skate or can't play out there, Ness?
Dude, you don't give yourself any credit. God, that's a great question, though.
I'm trying to think.
Who's a guy? For me, I'm thinking, I want to say undersized for a guy that's fighting like you fought. Man. God, that's a good question.
Yeah, I'm just thinking all these guys they're still playing the role. They're just better than myself.
Well, it's different now, right?
As far as maybe the attitude towards the role, maybe I see like Nick DeLoria. I mean, obviously he's just a better player. I mean, all around. I'm trying to think of guys that are still scrapping. Pretty regularly. I mean, still limited fighting. But,
right. It's not like there's a
lot. Trying to see guys that have like that, that relentless heart. There's not many guys there. Again, I played in a different era where I was able to act like that, and it's actually a thing. I mean, it's a little more composed now.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Yeah, is there many guys floating around?
I guess Nick would be good because, he takes on everyone. He's not huge.
Yeah.
Obviously. That's probably, yeah.
I mean, I would say have to agree as far as that goes. Yeah. But, I mean, I just want to be clear that he's a better player. And he's getting paid for it because he is efficient out there. So, but as far as, the role itself and being hungry and stepping up and showing up, I would probably say Nick DeLoria.
Good answer. Good question.
Yeah, really good question.
We got one more. Rich, not in Canada, over on Twitter. What team do you believe will take a major step forward and who will take a major step back in the 23-24 season?
I'm going to let you take that one, Nas, because
I
have no clue what's going on in the offseason here. Oh, man.
Gosh, man. A major step forward. Well, I'll say first, I don't want to say major step backwards, but losing...
Beantown, you're talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I know he's older. You're losing Bergeron and you're losing Krejci. That's a lot to lose, but I don't want to say a major step back. I still see they still have Posse, they still have
March. Oh, yeah.
They got a really good team. They're back in.
But certainly an effect.
Yeah.
I think the leadership in some way, shape, or form, even though they still do have a good core group
God,
there.
I mean, that's a great question, but I'd really have to...
Who's breaking through this year now?
Yeah, like insane Boston as well. They did add Lucic and JVR, two veteran
presence. Some veteran presence.
Yeah, so that should help them. So I don't want to say they're going to take a major step backwards, but I don't see them breaking records like last year. I mean, obviously that was just insane, the regular season. And as far as the team, maybe, I don't know about major strides forward or steps forward, but Baller had a good point about Columbus. They added Severson, they added Provy.
Fantilli.
Yeah, Fantilli. you know, maybe, and they were banged up last year too. Maybe, yeah. maybe they take a step forward.
With Babs,
you
know, Babs in charge.
That scares me, man. That scares me. But maybe, you know, they take a step forward and get back into the playoffs. That's, you know, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So that's a great question. You like really stumped me there because I have to really think about that. But I'm going to say Columbus maybe takes a step forward.
And the Fly Guys, I see a step forward. Maybe not a huge one.
Maybe you do?
A step forward.
I don't think they want to take a step forward.
Well, but I think
are you talking about wins and losses, or are you talking about?
I think, well, yeah, I like to think wins and losses. I think just overall, I mean, yeah, do they want to? Probably not.
This was the year to not,
yeah.
to not do
but
that.
I think naturally, yeah. I think they will.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're getting Coots back. Obviously, we've talked about it, Cam.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to compete because Torts is back there. Like,
yeah, exactly. They're going to compete. I mean, so. I don't see it being like a huge leap, but I mean, right. I like to think that they're inching in the right direction. But,
yes,
I
for mean, sure. For sure.
I'm also being a little biased.
It's all right. You can do that.
I think it's a wrap, Nast.
Is it?
124 in the books.
In the books.
Appreciate you all. Be sure to tune in for episode 125 next week. Until then, stay safe, knuckleheads.
Yep.